The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights. Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect. Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. That's tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This is a podcast by The Straits Times and Money FM 89.3.
Hello, and welcome to The Letter from the Bureau, a special series which is part of The Straits Times Asian Insider podcast channel. I'm your host, ST's foreign editor, Bhagyashree Gareka. Now, The Letter from the Bureau is meant to be a detour, a scenic detour from the raging news of the day. We like to talk about life as it goes on amid all the crises around us. I chat each month with one of ST's 30-odd correspondents in 15 cities across the Asia-Pacific, the United States, and Europe. And they share with you interesting trends and events unfolding in their countries. In our 12th episode, we are talking to ST's Indochina Bureau Chief, Tan Huiyi. It's good to have you on the show, Huiyi.
Hi, Bhagya. Good to be on the show.
Okay. Now, Thailand. You're in Thailand, which is a, you know, an all-time favorite for tourists just around the world. Now, are you seeing the tourists come back now that all the COVID-related restrictions on travel have been relaxed?
Well, conditions have certainly improved from last year, but the number of visitors landing in Thailand are still a fraction of the pre-pandemic levels. On the 1st of May, for example, Thailand scrapped this test and go system, which means that vaccinated tourists are free to enter the country without tests or quarantine. But they still had to go through this process called the Thailand Pass system, which many felt was very cumbersome. You know, you got to submit your insurance, your vaccination details, your flight details, and your address, all before you could get this QR code to enter Thailand, right? So tourists are not exactly rushing to Thailand yet. As of April, the kind of forward bookings we saw for this year was only 25% of pre-pandemic levels. Bear in mind that before the pandemic, Thailand was receiving something like 40 million visitors a year.
Now, you wrote very recently, Hui, about a trip that you made to Thailand's deep south. Now, I think that part of the country, many people still associate it with, you know, unrest and violence and terrorism more than tourism. Is that an unfair assessment now?
It's hard to say what's unfair because a lot of things changed with the pandemic, and the pandemic served to dampen a lot of activities in the entire country. So I went to Betong, which is this district right at the southern tip of Thailand. It's also at the southern tip of Thailand's southern border provinces, which is Pattani, Yala, Narathiwat, and a part of Songkla province. Collectively, this is known as the Deep South. And over here, the Malay separatists have been fighting an insurgency since 2004. The BRN, which is the main insurgent group, it declared a halt to its activities in April 2020 to try to facilitate efforts by the public health workers to contain the pandemic. The Thai security forces did not reciprocate and continued hunting down the militants. So that triggered a retaliation. So we saw a kind of dampening down of activities, but then also as a result of the authorities' reaction, we saw a rise in the number of violent incidents last year. This was the first rise since 2013. So overall, it's a bit hard to say whether it's still whether the violence is still at the same level as it was before the pandemic. Things are still developing, but definitely peace talks have resumed between the Thai government and the separatists.
So you wrote recently about heading to Betong, Hui. I was wanting to ask you, what's so special about Betong? You know, what might you see and do there? And I guess for tourists from here, especially the more popular destinations might still be Bangkok or Phuket, for instance. So why should anyone go to Betong? And why did you?
I went to Betong because I first went to Beitong in 2018 as part of a two-week assignment to the Thai Deep South. I wanted to see what it was like living in this area, which is plagued by insurgency. And that's when I realized how varied the experiences can be, depending on the location that you travel to. Beitong was one of the places that I went to, and I would say it's a very unique place. It is located in the mountainous area of the Deep South, which in itself is dominated by Malay Muslims. But in Beitong town, you will see many ethnic Chinese. Many of them were members of the Malayan Communist Party, who, you know, settled down under an amnesty program in the 1980s. So that's fed into the local culture. On the streets, you see a mixture of Chinese, Thai, Malay food, a lot more Chinese temples. I will hear Cantonese and Mandarin being spoken. And although the wider area is a restive region, Beitong itself has escaped most of the violence. The last incident that people can recall was in the 2014 when a car bomb went off in front of a hotel downtown. Back then, that killed 3 people and wounded over 30 others. But since then, it's been pretty peaceful. People in Beitong, they get by with small rubber plantations, but there's also an active tourism industry which focuses on the Malaysians who cross the border from Perak.
So plenty to see there and eat, I think, from the way you describe it. Now, so tell me now, between the trip that you made earlier and this one, what was the difference? I mean, the place must have changed because of pandemic as elsewhere, but what were the kind of differences you saw on your trip?
Yeah, that's the interesting part, because before the pandemic, Beitong was known for its dim sum and its nightlife. You wouldn't think that this small little town would have a nightlife, but it was considered like a party place for the Malaysians who crossed over. It had a lot of karaoke bars. It had also a lot of good street food. And after the pandemic, the dim sum stayed, but the nightlife disappeared. The tourists also disappeared because most of their tourists came from across the border and the border checkpoint was closed. But something interesting happened along the way. As the locals started looking inward, they started developing restaurants and cafes that catered more to Thai tastes. So I was speaking to one of the cafe owners, and she recently started this cafe that looked like this giant cactus. It had its grass roof. It had a lot of very pretty corners that you could take photographs for your Instagram account. And she mentioned that this was something that the Thai tourists would love, but it was not something that people in Beitong would have thought to do for the pandemic, because, you know, the Malaysian tourists were there. So the KTB bars were just, you know, fine for them. So that was something that changed. And another thing that changed was the street art. They had this program to introduce a lot more street art on all these the walls of these old shop houses in Beitong. So I had a walk around the old town. I was accompanied by some of the locals. It was amazing. You could see there was a little shrine that was dedicated to Guan Yu, which is the god of war. Next to that shrine was this mural that was kind of like a modern depiction of this god of war. And then you had these fantastical images of the Beitong chicken, which is more like the kampong chicken that we Singaporeans know. Beitong is known for its swallows. These swallows kind of roost in the downtown area at night.
Right.
So there were these depictions of swallows that ran right across these walls of the shophouses. And then you had like super-sized frogs and cats just looking down at you as you drove past in your car or you know, just walked past. So there were lots of these. When I was there, there were a lot of these tourists who were just walking around town, taking pictures, taking selfies next to these murals. It was quite a sight. One more thing that changed was also in the Beitong district, they had this thing called the Iron Ring Skywalk.
Mm.
So that's a tall tower with a glass-floored bridge in an area which they call the Sea of Mist. So if you dare, you can have take a walk on this glass-floored bridge where you will see the treetops beneath your feet. And you will have this amazing 360-degree view of the mist and the mountains around you.
Right. So did you dare?
Yeah, it took me a while. It took me something like 5 minutes staring at the glass floor before I could kind of take a deep breath and step out. But it was worth it.
This podcast is available on our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Like us and rate us. And now, back to our podcast episode.
The other thing you mentioned was street art. So again, I think it's been seen in some, you know, Malaysian cities. I think Penang and Melaka, and I think some Indonesian cities as well. So it seems to be part of something that's, I suppose, aimed at stoking or tapping local creativity, local artists. And it does add a charm to the city. And I know it's popular with people who like to go and, you know, take pictures and all that stuff. So was that local as well?
It was interesting. What's interesting as well is that these, the images that they chose to put on the murals, they reference local history. So people pointed out to me, for example, that some of the hawkers that they painted on the walls, they were real people. They were people who lived in this town.
So the famous hawkers, mm-hmm. were they like institutions of, you know, people people remember fondly, something like that?
Yes. And then there was another one of two basketball legends from Beitong.
Oh.
They were also depicted on the walls.
Interesting. So obviously, a lot of thought has gone into this kind of thing. And I think I would enjoy a visit to a place like that, which values its local culture really good. But tell me, this other thing is the airport. Now, you wrote about the airport being important and, you know, even having some kind of transformation potential for Beitong. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so the thing about Beitong is that it's relatively inaccessible. If you're a local tourist and you wanted to go to Beitong, you usually landed in Hat Yai Airport. And then you have to spend something like
mm-hmm.
4 hours in a van to get to Beitong. That's about 300 kilometers away. And I've driven that route. I mean, the view is stunning, but it's winding and steep in some places. And you need a strong stomach because, you know, if you don't, you end up throwing up.
Mm. Are the roads well maintained though?
Oh, yes. The roads are good.
Okay.
Yeah. So the local Beitong residents, they tell me that, you know, if you wanted to go to Bangkok, you essentially had to spend 1 day, right? So therefore, having that airport was important for the people of Beitong. I think it was also important for Beitong's economy. Essentially, it connected Beitong to Bangkok, which is a vital source of local tourists.
Right.
As well as international tourists, because I think much as the view is stunning, you know, from Hat Yai Airport, I think people do want an easier way to, you know, get to the place they want to go to.
Yeah, that definitely would make sense. So it's a treasured airport. Was it the work of, you know, the political leaders of that area? How did it come about? And you know, why is it a thing? I mean, why wasn't it there all this while?
I would say that there was a lot of local lobbying being done to get the airport built. And the thing about Beitong Airport is that it had to surmount a lot of obstacles to get built.
Mm-hmm.
They had to first acquire the land. From what I heard from the local politicians, some of the land was came from rubber plantations. Some of them was dwellings of various villages. So it was a complicated process.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually when they did build the airport, the runway was unusually short. It was only 1.8 kilometers. So it could only accommodate turboprops like the ATR-72 mm-hmm. or the Bombardier Q400. The problem is there are only two airlines in Thailand that have these planes. And as you know, the aviation industry worldwide has been battered by the pandemic. So it was very difficult to convince airlines to take the chance on this new route. But anyway, you know, on the 14th of March, the Prime Minister Prayut, he took the inaugural commercial flight to Betong. And that was on Nok Air. But after that first flight, they cancelled the remaining flights because of low demand. So that was a shock to locals who were expecting this new route to open up. The tickets were expensive. You know, my return ticket between Bangkok and Betong came up to about 8,000 baht. And that's like the cost of traveling between Singapore and Thailand. So that played a part in the low demand. But after that, you know, there were intense negotiations between Nok Air and tour operators. And they eventually sealed the deal to keep the planes in the air for the next 3 months. So these tour operators would buy 60 out of each flight's 86 seats. And the deal was that the airline would then run the flights between Bangkok and Betong 3 days a week on Tuesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. So that's for 3 months. We don't know what's going to happen after 3 months.
You know, apart from it being important, obviously, to the local economy, what about Thailand as a whole? Are they, for instance, marketing it as a place to go to? Are they trying to do things for Betong?
I know the Tourism Authority of Thailand is trying to promote Betong as one of the next new interesting destinations. The locals definitely, they see a lot of potential in Betong. You know, they say like, you've been to Koh Samui, you've been to Phuket, why not come to the mountains and see Betong? So this is how they are trying to promote themselves. But I think it's really also a function of price. You know, when you speak to the locals, they don't doubt that, say, if the tickets on the flights were like half the current price, you would see a lot more people just come to Betong on their own rather than rely on tour operators who are able to lower the prices through economies of scale.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the place does sound interesting. So you would recommend this to our listeners? And hopefully taking the plane rather than, you know, the winding mountain path.
Yeah, I think it's quite a sight to come into Betong by plane. And I think it's also quite an experience to wander through its streets, look at the street art, and just speak to local people who have so much history to share.
Well, so that does sound inviting, at least to me. And I suppose I might consider it. Well, thank you for that, Huiyi. And with that, it's a wrap for the Letter from the Bureau. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to read Huiyi's column, we have a link for you in our podcast description box. And you'll also find there a link to all the other stories that have appeared in our Letter from the Bureau series.
The Asian Insider Podcast channel is also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Like us and rate us.